Welcome to the PS Midnight Cast.
The show where we're only chasing the nondies.
And where darkness comes to die.
I'm your host, Riff Daddy.
I'm your other host, Captain Nostalgia. How's your week been, bro?
It's been good. Almost got my lawns there for a second.
It's all good. So you
other than that, I'm okay.
You actually just came back from WrestleMania.
Well, not kinda. I didn't go to WrestleMania.
Well, whatever. You were in the same place as WrestleMania, so tell us a little bit about it, man.
Well, I went to New Orleans for WrestleMania weekend, and I went for all the independent. I went for the WWN experience. So I went to Matt Riddle's Blood, or no, excuse me. I watched Matt Riddle's Bloodsport, but I went to Evolve 102. Then I attended Beyond Wrestling's intergender show at midnight on Thursday. And then Friday I woke up, went to Progress, went to another Evolve show. I went to the WWN Super Show. And then I went to, what was after Super Show? Joe Janela's Spring Break 2. And then that was a midnight show. And then the next night, the next Saturday was a jumbo wrestling show. So I went to another Progress show. And then I went to, after Progress, did Shimmer at 4. I left middle of Shimmer to go to WWE WrestleMania Access because they booked Walter versus Cassius Ohno, Chris Hero. That was a big match for me to see. So I went to that, left. Came back to the venue, and I went to Style Battle, and then I went to Kaji Big Battle at midnight. So I went to 11 wrestling shows in the span of 3 days.
So how exactly does that work? So, like, do all these, like, independent wrestle companies kind of, like, say, all right, well, WWE is doing WrestleMania in this particular city. Let's book these smaller events and offer fans of, you know, that might be mainstream something a little bit different, or fans of these particular wrestlers something special?
Well, I mean, all the diehards go to WrestleMania. Like, you know, all the diehard fans get together for that, like, trip out for it. So, a couple, I guess this started about four or five years ago. The last time WWE brought WrestleMania to New Orleans, Evolve, WWN, they ran that weekend. And then after they ran, it was such a success, they decided to do it again. And so the first time it was a big deal was WrestleMania in 2016, I think. Yeah, where WWN got together, like, they did a couple of Evolve shows, a Shimmer show, and then WrestleCon, which is like a con for wrestling personalities. Like, they have their own package of wrestling. And last year, it grew bigger for WWN and WrestleCon. And then this year, it was the same thing. Like, WWN, the package I went to, was in its own venue. And then WrestleCon had their own package of different wrestling promotions. Was in their own venue. Ring of Honor came and did a show in a different venue. And then the WWE NXT did their stuff in their own venue, too. So, I mean, there was a lot of options. And it's like, like, I actually ran into a family, because you asked, like, if it's to attract certain people. I went into a family. When I got into New Orleans that Thursday night, I went to the Evolve show. And I sat general admission because I didn't feel like paying a four-seat ticket because I was going to be late to the show. So I sat behind this family. And there was a dad, his wife, and 3 kids. And I could tell that they had no idea who Matt Riddle was, who Zack Sabre Jr. was, who these guys were. I could just tell. And then I didn't see him again until Saturday. I went to the Style Battle show, and I sat behind him again. It just happened. I sat behind him, and I was talking to the dad, and I was like, "Hey, I sat behind y'all," and he was talking to me. So the venue that WWN was running their shows, their package, there's a hotel by, which is where I stayed at. Well, they stayed there too. And they were just at the hotel Thursday, and someone told them there was wrestling. So they just, like, well, okay. So they just came over to the shows when they could. They had no idea who people were. So it's like, the fans that come, the diehard fans, are going to go to their shows. But then also, like the fans who have no idea about independent wrestling are gonna find out somehow and go to at least one show. So it's kind of a mixture of like the casual WWE fans who only watch WWE, and then the diehard fans who watch all professional wrestling.
Sounds like you had a good time, bro.
Yeah. It was really good. And before we move on, girl, I don't know your name, but the girl that I talked to at Progress that about my Hey Arnold wallet that said she knew our, they listened to our podcast. If you hear this, please let us know. I did not find you at the next show. I couldn't find you the rest of the weekend.
Believe
so.
Me, he looked.
Yeah. That was really cool. Looked. That was really cool.
My jaw dropped when you said that to me. I was like, what? I was like, I didn't know. Oh, but I mean, I guess, you know, now being on the Farsighted Network, we now have, I guess, a greater reach.
Yeah.
More pool than, you know, outside of victims. So.
Well, she said she heard it under. She said she heard it under at the episode, so I don't know. I mean, she might have just came across it on YouTube or something, but.
It's possible.
Definitely. I mean.
It's a shame that she picked up one of the episodes that we, like, only half of us knew anything about.
Yeah, I wonder if she's friends with that guy.
Oh, yeah. The guy who called us idiots.
By the way, dude.
High five to you, dude.
Yeah, for real, because you have that demo of that old Undro song on your YouTube page, and I go to it all the freaking time, so.
Anyways, you know. Yeah, so while you're at WrestleMania, WrestleCon, and all these other indie shows, I, however, did nothing special, so I have nothing to report. I got to appear on a couple other podcasts. So, shout out to Kid Flicks and the Crazy Clinic podcast.
I thought you were going
to
say Kid Rock. I was like,
no, yeah. Dude, Kid Flicks is on point.
Never heard of that.
It's this dude named Ross Wiseman looks at every kid's movie ever made. They've covered a crap ton of Kid Flicks. We did a Goofy movie. And I was also on Superhero Movie Cast, so I got to do some fun things while you were away.
I did see you post about the Goofy movie, and I was wondering about that.
Bro, Goofy movie is one of the best underrated Disney movies of all time. And Ross kind of destroyed it for me. I think that's his superpower.
Man. Did you like the Extreme Goofy movie?
So we did a crossover with them for Victims, and we watched an Extremely Goofy movie. And I actually hated the movie, but we made the conversation extremely deep and philosophical.
That's really cool. I'd listen to that. I saw you post about it, but I didn't know what it was. But I didn't like Extreme Goofy movie either, but I'm definitely a Max looking for my... Never mind.
Roxanne, who apparently does not exist in an Extremely Goofy movie universe.
I know, right? It's freaking dumb.
I was like, man, you went literally halfway across the country.
For real.
Just to prove that your lie was real, and then you don't exist in the second movie. Like, how does that even work?
I have a question, though. The first movie, the pizza... Did that change the way you like judge a pizza, like the cheese? Because it has in my life. Like I judge pizza cheese from that movie. Like if it doesn't pass the Goofy movie test, then it's not good pizza.
Like, dude, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did it too. Like back in, I would say on Kidflix that I was angry when I would get a pizza, and it wouldn't do the cheese thing, because I was like, cartoons lied to me.
Yeah, I know. I get pizza every now and then that does that, and it's pretty awesome.
New York style pizza does that. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, there's a place down in Birmingham called Little Italy Pizza and Pints, or Pies and Pints, excuse me. And they're like New York style, and it's pretty awesome.
Okay, so we're going to provide a link in the description below, and you guys can send me to Birmingham to experience this pizza.
Oh, I can. I mean, there's a lot of good pizza places around here, honestly. Birmingham is like on the radar of like top 10, 15 places, states to visit because of the food culture. And it's really weird, but I like it.
Well, I now know where I want to go on vacation.
Yeah, there's a lot of good food here. I mean, dude, we have...
My wife loves food. I am not really the food guy, but if there's something within, like, something good, I'll take it.
Do you like sushi burritos? Or do you like sushi?
I love sushi.
Do you like burritos?
I love burritos.
How about sushi burritos? We have those here.
Sushi burritos.
Yes.
Okay, we're going to Birmingham next vacation.
It's called Wasabi Ones. It's pretty sick.
Wasabi Ones is what it's called.
There's also a food truck that makes everything with bacon. Like, everything has bacon on it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You had me at bacon. Yeah. All right, so, speaking of the Goofy movie.
This right here dates back to our episode we did when we talked about snacks and food and all that stuff.
Good burger. good burger.
Was that a year ago? No.
I know, it was about 6 months ago. No, 9 months
ago. No, because, like, we're reaching a year when we reconnected, so, I mean.
Yes, but our first episode didn't hit till June.
Right, so, and June is in a couple of months.
It's, like, 6 weeks away now. It's just so weird to think, because I feel like this year has flown by. But bringing it back to the Goofy movie, what do you got this week for Hidden Gem?
Dude, okay, this isn't really a hidden gem, but I think this is something that kind of got not a lot of people talked about. I feel like not a lot of people talked about it, but I'm excited about it, and I've been watching it. The Roseanne reboot. You don't have to stay on it if you don't want to, but I'm a Roseanne fan.
No, man, let's stay on it for a couple minutes, because I'm not a Roseanne fan. She always annoyed me. When I would watch the reruns on, like, Nick at Night or, like, TBS or, like, TV Land. I don't know why. It was, like, the one show I could never get into as a kid. And all my friends loved it. I don't know why. I could not stand her.
It's not really a hidden gem, but I feel like it's not being talked about as much, or, like, in my community. And I remember messaging you, like, a couple weeks ago and asking why didn't we cover it. You never responded, so I figured you didn't care.
I really don't, but I was kind of like, enough of my friend, like, there's enough people that might be talking about this, so maybe
that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Reconnect,
like,
with it.
The only person that I can talk to about it is my mother, because she's been watching the new season, too. That's the only person
How
I can
is
talk
it?
I love it. I mean, they brought everyone back, like, I don't know how to go into it. Okay, this isn't really a spoiler, because, like, I mean, they have Becky, like the original actress who played Becky, not the one that replaced her. They brought her back, but the actress who did replace Becky later on is in it too. I mean, it's cool how they brought her in. Like, but Roseanne, John Goodman is still the man. By the way, they brought the original Darlene.
So.
Like, everyone's original. Like, it's crazy. And tonight's episode, I haven't watched it obviously, but. They're bringing back Darlene's boyfriend from the show, and father to her oldest daughter, David, is being brought back tonight. So I can't wait to watch that and see what they do with that.
It's a cool piece of 90s history. Like, I loved watching John Goodman's career, because, like, John Goodman now is, like, one of my favorite actors. But, like, growing up, like, I couldn't stand him. Because I knew him from Roseanne and The Big Lebowski. Like, Big Lebowski, I've never actually seen all the way through.
Yeah, me either.
So, like, I can't compare that, but, like, Roseanne, like, the very few episodes I've seen on there, it's just like, no. No. But John Goodman's a fantastic actor now.
I love him. He's lost a lot of weight, too. Like, he looks great in this show. And,
yeah,
and Roseanne, it looks Roseanne's scary. Looking pretty good, too. So.
Oh, you just have to throw that in there.
No, but Darlene, though, anyway.
We'll talk about good looking, apparently, when we get to our main course. But my hidden gem of this week is a TV show that I didn't even know existed until the beginning of this year. It's a TV show that is now streaming on Amazon Prime. It's called Eerie, Indiana.
I think I've heard of that.
So Erie, Indiana was a show that ran from September 15th, 1991 to April 12th, 1992. It only had 19 episodes. It was like, it ran on NBC, I guess in prime time, but it was essentially like a, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it. It was like a serialized version of Goosebumps. So like it like Are You Afraid of the Dark, but it had like all like it had like one big plot like woven throughout the entire thing. Like it wasn't just like random scary stories told. But it was cool the way that they told it. I watched probably like half the series when we had Amazon Prime. I need to go back and finish it, but if you guys are into something like Are You Afraid of the Dark, Goosebumps, this is a good show. I was just talking to Justin about this from the Farsighted Network. I was just talking to him about this like a couple weeks ago. This is a very underrated TV show that existed back in the 90s. It's now, I think, gained a cult following, and it had a spinoff called The Other Dimension that aired in 98. So, I mean, it still has a cult following. It's still a show that I think we'll always have a following because it's really cool the way that the show's set up. You should check it out.
I know a show like that from the 90s that has a cult following still that's very underrated.
What is it?
Animorphs.
Oh, see, I only know one guy that still likes Animorphs.
Is it me?
And yes.
I'm still collecting all the books. I almost got it.
Do it, and we started. We expect to start hearing some reviews coming throughout here. So, you all right?
Yeah. Sorry, I had a letter alert. And I didn't know what it was. It was kind of weird.
Okay. All right, hopping back on. All right, so I'm gonna turn my dial in the celebrity guest that I booked for this show.
Okay, can you say, tell me who it is, or I know who it is.
You will know who it is.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. you in?
Hello.
Huh?
Hello.
Hey. Hi.
Is this Riff Daddy?
Yeah.
This is Elmo.
Hey, Elmo.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Nostalgia booked me for this gig. He promised me lots of sugar. And lollipops. So, you gonna do the interview or what?
Sure.
Go for it. Elmo needs sugar!
Alright, so, how was it writing that song with Emo Side Project by Emo Elmo back in the 2000s?
It's amazing! This must be a 90s show! Talk to me about Sesame Street and Tickle Me Elmo!
Tickle Me Elmo ruined my life, so.
Goodbye!
Alright, so that was our celebrity guest, Elmo.
That took me off guard.
You know what else took me off guard?
What's that?
This beautiful bad boy, Mutant Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Wait, no, that's the wrong storyline. Mutant Genesis, which is what we're here covering today.
Woo!
So whoop.
So whoop.
Yeah, it'll catch on.
Yeah. Wow. Kind of like Larry and Anthony. The hashtag VB sucks. We'll start hashtag so whoop.
Yeah, you should. We really should.
You have to write that out how I'm supposed to like spell that because I don't know.
I have to ask Jay. He made it up.
Okay, cool. All right, so you ready to jump in and talk about some X-Men?
Yeah, I'm a little shaken from Elmo because I mean it's a big guess and I didn't know like I bombed that interview because I wasn't prepared and my emo brain could think of only one thing to ask him.
Bro, he called me and he was like, he blacklisted you from ever doing press, so I'm sorry.
Well, shouldn't have been emo in 2006.
Well, he was emo because he got tickled too much.
He ruined my life, man. Dude, that thing was evil.
All right. So, X-Men Genesis 2.0 is what we're here covering today. Let me give you guys some background facts. So, the series that launched this X-Men is now, today, if you guys are ever looking to cover it or find issues of it, it goes by multiple different names, but it is mostly known as X-Men Legacy. It ran for 300 issues. Not only did it run for 300 issues, but it also was known from 2001 to 2004 as New X-Men. And so in 1991, Marvel launched, reading right from Wikipedia, Marvel launched X-Men Volume 2 as a spinoff of the parent title Uncanny X-Men with co-writers Chris Claremont and Jim Lee. Previously, the penciler on Uncanny X-Men moving over to X-Men, while studio mate Wils Portillo took over penciling duties on Uncanny X-Men. Number one is still the best-selling comic book of all time, with pre-order sales of over 8.4 million copies, according to Guinness Book of World Records, which presented honors to Claremont at the 2010 San Diego Comic-Con. That's impressive.
I have a Kitty Pryde Funko Pop from that Comic-Con on Amazon.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Lack of
Shadowcat in this comic book was sickening, by the way.
I don't know. We'll jump in and talk about it here in a second. It's estimated that somewhere between 3 to 4 million copies were actually sold. The figure sales were generated in part by the publishing issue with 5 different variant covers, 4 of which showed different characters from the book that were combined into a tetragraph image. And I actually have this. See, you got yours digitally, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay, so I actually have the full comic book here. So the 4 variants that you can get are, one has Archangel, Beast, Storm, Jean Grey, and Professor X. The second one has Cyclops, Gambit, Colossus, and Rogue. The third one has Wolverine and Cyclops, and the last one has Magneto. And it looks something like this.
Oh, yeah, it has these in here. But you had it too far up, so I couldn't see it. But I know what you're talking about, though. Right here. Yeah.
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
Beautiful,
beautiful Psylocke.
And the 5th grade fold cover that combined these 4 large numbers, of which were purchased by retailers who anticipated fans and spectators would buy multiple copies in order to acquire a complete collection of the covers. So people like Ian, who would buy these, so shout out to Ian. Chris Claremont left after only 3 issues due to creative differences with editor Bob Harras and writers John Braun, who is a fantastic Superman writer, and Scott Lobdell, who is another fantastic Batman and Robin writer, handled dialogue after Claremont's departure, and Lee himself left the title after issue 11 to form a new company, Image Comics, with several other Marvel artists. Initially, the book focused on a team led by Cyclops, with other members forming a squad led by Storm. At this premise, as at times faded from the mention, only to be resurrected, with the X-Men divided at times into 2 and 3 to separate squads. So this title ran for 10 years and then switched to New X-Men in 2001. Still pretty impressive. And not only that, but it introduced one of the most underrated Marvel villains ever in comic books,
which is
Omega Red.
He was cool, but I really like the other dude that looked like Wolverine a little bit, the haircut.
Oh, the Japanese guy, Masato?
Yeah, he was cool.
What's wrong with you?
I thought he was cool. I don't know. Hey, cool hair.
Okay, so this is something that I've really been looking forward to doing. But I want to... I'm a comic connoisseur, so I love reading comics, but I want to jump in to get your thoughts as a casual comic fan. What did you like about this book?
Well, I like that it really kicked in after... Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was really confused at reading it at first. It took me a little bit to kind of, like, understand what was going on. But I really liked... it really showed a lot of family. Like, there's a family love through the X-Men. Especially with Wolverine. Where I think it was close to the end where him and Cyclops was having that moment where, like... You know, like, Wolverine was going to go off and Cyclops is like, you know, we're not going to go with you, but, you know, if you need us, we're here for you. And Wolverine says something like, you know, I never knew what it was like to have a family. Something like that. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it really showed just how strong their unity really was despite like, differences and fusses and all that stuff. Like, to me, that was one of the main things I got. It really brought out the side of Wolverine that, like, Wolverine fans that know he knows it's there. You know, he has a huge heart for people. Like, he really does. And anything with Sabretooth pulls me in, too. So, there's that.
No, I'm glad that you had mentioned, like, right off the bat, like, the arc, like, the starting arc of this story is, like, the fallout of Asteroid M. Like,
that's what got me lost. I did not know.
I think it's kind of, like, BS that... Here you have a number one, like a first issue of a brand new volume. You look at, like, how things have worked in the past. And I know I'm going to pull, like, a whole bunch of DC references, but, like, Wonder Woman, George Perez, number one, it started right after Crisis, so it was a fresh, clean slate. New 52, fresh, clean slate, right after Flashpoint, Rebirth, same deal. And, like, I don't know. Like, to me, when I pick up a number one, like, I don't want to have to know previous information from the series. Like, I want a jumping on point. That way, I don't have to, like, Google what I, like... I mean, by the second issue, you can kind of, like, gather context clues about, like, what happened. But I don't know. Like, the whole Asteroid M thing, like, really annoyed me about this comic book. And I felt like I was kind of like you, where I was like, it kind of let me down the first three issues, and then they introduced Omega Red, and I was like, bro, this is so good.
Yeah, when I got to that point, I was kind of like, yep, this is really good. But I had to, like, research and reach out to my cousin, he's a lot younger than us. He's 15, but he is... Well, that should sum it up. He's 15, so he has nothing else to do but look at comic book stuff all day long on his phone. So he knows a lot about it.
At least he's looking at comic books and not other things.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I didn't want to have to research issues or, like, go... Because, like, I read the first issue and went to my local comic shop, and I'm like... Why is Magneto in space? Like, can you someone explain this to me? Because, I don't know, I like to interact with people and be weird like that, I guess. But my wife was like, why don't you just Google it? I'm like, that's so much work.
Yeah. That's why I texted you, because I didn't feel like putting work in, but then I just got old Alex over here, and he, oh yeah. At first he thought we were doing, I think it was like Dead Genocide or something like that. He was like, dude, you got to start a big, a giant X-Men. I'm like, wait, what? No. wait a second.
Dead Genesis is another story arc in the X-Men franchise.
Yeah, he thought that's what we're doing. I was like, no. Like, oh, okay. Now you understood.
But I will say that, like, of the Magneto story arc, I saw a... scene in the comic books I never knew I needed until I saw it. The Magneto versus Psylocke battle was amazing.
That was, that was really cool.
It is currently my my screensaver on my phone. I love it.
That's really cool. My screensaver is actually Rogue and Gambit. Like, it's been that for like 3 months now.
Nice. I don't know. I think both me and you, like, I think we have love for Psylocke. Like, Psylocke is my favorite X-Men, so do you want to talk about Psylocke?
She's up there for me. She was looking good in this comic. I need to stop.
I think that girl from WrestleMania is going to hear this, and she's going to be like, this guy's so weird.
Yeah, I mean, dude, did your issue have this in it?
I cannot see that, what that is. It's super blurry.
You see it now?
No. Oh. Is that Beast?
It's the picture of, like, they're all at the pool hanging out.
Oh, the one you texted me about.
That actually wasn't it. That was a different part in the comic that I texted you about.
I mean, yeah, I have the same exact book as you, dude.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So I don't know exactly which one you're referring to. Oh, you're talking about Rogue in the pool?
They're all in the at the swimming pool. I'm
trying to find it. Why are you bringing up this particular issue?
I just happened to see it. And we're talking about Psylocke, so anyway, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Psylocke's one of those characters that I didn't know. Well, I only knew who she was because the original cartoon that came out in the '90s, and she was in the Guido game, you know, Apocalypse too. So like, I kind of got into her after I got into X-Men, because my main thing for X-Men was X-Men Evolution. That was like the main thing that got me into X-Men when I was like, I don't know, 12, 11, something like that.
Was she in Evolution?
No, she was not, but I didn't know about her after I got into it, and that's what got me into wanting to explore X-Men in general. But that's how I fell in love with Kitty Pryde, though, is that cartoon.
So weird. No. I was really anticipating Apocalypse a couple years ago when they finally brought him to big screen, and I read every Apocalypse. A buddy of mine was like, I was like, I really want to know who this character is. So he gave me literally every appearance of Apocalypse that had ever existed in the comics. And I read it and was fascinated by this character. And so when they casted Olivia Munn as Psylocke in the Apocalypse movie, I was really excited because I grew up with Olivia Munn on Attack of the Show. Do you remember that show?
I know she's talking about, but I don't know if I ever watched it.
Bro, G4 was the show back in the day. But I remember like wanting to know more about her character. Because I saw the character design, I was like, this seems like something I would be into. So I went and I just got my hands on so many different story arcs that I could find, random issues that I could find, which actually happens to be the 6th issue in this one, which is the one with her and Sabretooth on the front cover.
That was a cool cover.
She did a duology of episodes. Like I think it's like 76 and 77 called Psy War. That was a really great the art style of the X-Men in the late 90s got super weird. Super weird. Like it's like people took a whole bunch of PCP and they're like, let's make cartoons, but let's do X-Men. It was just so weird. But I love Psylocke. She's definitely my favorite character.
Yeah, so, she's definitely one of my favorites. I love her a lot.
No, like I did her, hands down, I think is my favorite Marvel character of all time. I love me some Jean Grey, but Psylocke just has like as I've just kind of like connected with her story, it's such a fascinating, like she just has a fascinating arc that the comics have explored. And like, I was so kind of pissed when they finally came out with Apocalypse and like just did not do her character justice. Like, the way that they treat her in the comics is the same exact way that they treat her in this. So that's why I was really excited to start reading some of this Chris Claremont, Jim Lee stuff, was because she was so prominent in the, as a character in this, that I really liked it and really wanted more of it.
Hey, by the way, before we keep going, your voice got a lot more different than what it was. I don't know if it's on my side or your side. I'm not really sure.
I think it's on your side, dude.
I think so,
I'm
too.
Getting, okay, so I think I'm getting... Do you want to hang up and start again?
Yeah, let's do that. Just to see, because I don't... All right, I'm hanging up.
Okay.
Hey. Hey. Huh?
Check one, hey. Check two.
Yes, can you hear me?
Hey. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm good.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
You ready? Okay. So Psylocke is not the only... What?
I don't know what's going on. It's sort of doing poor connection. All right. Huh? Not that I know of. It's just me and my grandparents.
Is anyone streaming in your house?
Yeah, I got you. Sorry about that.
So, obviously you can hear me now. Okay. Not a problem. So, not only is this a awesome arc for the Psylocke character, but we also got this is like the birthing place, if I'm correct, I could be wrong, of the gold.
I didn't even really
of the X-Men
know much about that until this.
I didn't either. So like a couple years ago, I think it was like last year when Marvel like did their legacy restart, they brought out the gold and the blue teams again, and it was supposed to be this like big throwback. And I was like, what is this big throwback that everyone keeps talking about? And it wasn't until I picked up this book that I actually understood what everyone had been talking about for the last year. I don't know. I can't remember which group was which, like what color belonged to which. But
yeah, I think so.
I think the blue team was Cyclops' team, right?
No. Okay.
No. Yes, that is right. So blue team was Cyclops, Beast, Rogue, Gambit, Psylocke, and Wolverine, and then you had the gold team, which was Archangel, Storm, Jean Grey, Forge, Iceman, and Banshee, and Colossus, which had some weird unknown people.
Yeah, I didn't know who Forge was, actually.
Until the spark. Yeah, and Banshee was weird.
Yeah, I've heard of Banshee, but I didn't really know much about him.
I don't know why, it's just, it was weird. Banshee, actually, I was doing research, so like when I uncovered a little bit more about who Omega Red was, apparently there's a comic out there that exists where Omega Red is actually has like one of his like superpowers is that he can develop what's called death spores. So essentially, if I remember correctly, he can have like spores pop over his body, and like the ooze of that, or like the scent of those things, they can literally kill you. And apparently Banshee actually killed or, like, put him in a coma, Omega Red. Just thought that was fascinating because, like...
Oh, yeah.
All that I really know about Banshee is, like, he's this, like, kind of, like, scrawny kid. But it was kind of cool to see Omega Red in this because I feel like he's such an underrated villain. And they really utilized a lot of the underrated elements of the X-Men universe because Psylocke, here again, is one of the... We just got on talking about how she's very much an underrated
X-Men. I've seen him before.
X-Men.
Some of the character in general, right?
But what did you think about Omega Red, man?
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Well, this is his comic
but
debut.
I've
right
seen
here.
Him before.
Of this arc.
In comics and stuff and pictures. I didn't really know who he was, but I really liked him because I always love... I mean, I'm a big Wolverine fan, so I always enjoy people coming back from Wolverine's past. You know, like... Because he was definitely tied into Wolverine's past before he became Wolverine and all that stuff, so that was really cool. But as far as a villain goes, like, I don't know, there's something about him. Because, like, I've always liked Sabretooth a lot because he just always had, like, this like, bad A, like, vibe to him. He just did whatever the heck he wanted whenever he wanted. And I felt like Mega Red was that, but times 10. Like, he just, like, it was just, hey, I'm Mega Red. You can't stop me. I do whatever the heck I want. I haven't.
A big Wolverine fan, I gotta ask this. Have you seen Logan yet?
I mean, I'd...
Okay, so I'm gonna try and spoil this as least as possible. Omega Red... Okay, well, look. The villain that they introduce into the Logan should have been differently. Logan is a missed opportunity because here you have someone that is existing in the past that, like, could have tied all of Wolverine's, like, the entire trilogy together, and they missed it. Like, Omega Red would have been an awesome villain for the last Wolverine movie because, like, issues, like, 4 through 7 are essentially one big, like, Wolverine storyline. X-Men just, like, happen to be, like, supporting players in it. And seeing Omega Red would have been an awesome experience in that because, like, that whole balance between, like, Charles and, like, X-23, like, you still could have had those in there. But having Omega Red,
I
want to
see it. I mean, there's a lot of movies I haven't seen that I need to see. I made a vow to be better this year, and I haven't. Dude, I sure did. I think we're going to see. I think me and some friends are going to go see
Strangers.
Cop Blockers this weekend because John Cena's in it.
If you guys haven't never checked out X-Men Genesis, please go check it out because it is one of the best X-Men storylines of all time. Not only that, introduces one of the best villains, underrated villains in the Marvel canon, and also on the top of that, it also has some great team dynamics, great family dynamics, like Brandon was talking about, and is still the best-selling comic book of all time, so there's got to be a reason that it's still sought after. I highly recommend it.
All right, so this is going to be a little different setup than
about John
my
Cena,
usual
this week in
wrestling moment. Usually I do a moment or I do a match, but today I'm going to actually spotlight, let's try to get a name for this. Let's just say an unsung jobber of the 90s. It's a wrestling term that Josh doesn't know. So, jobber. This is someone who's there to get the job done, put someone
what
over.
Is it again?
But I mean, this guy's not a jobber. Let's just say unsung. This guy's an unsung hero of the 90s. This is what we'll call this guy. So I'm here to talk to you guys about Q Baker Pierre, also known as P. Pierre Carl Ulay. So the reason why I'm giving him this spotlight is because when I was in New Orleans, I attended a show called George Nellis Spring Break 2. This man wrestled PCO, Pierre Carl Ulay. He wrestled Walter. And I'm going to get into the match later, but this is why we're talking. But I was going to give you a little while I'm talking about. So Carl Ulay started his wrestling career. He started training in the 80s, but he didn't really start getting out there until the early 90s. So he started out in the WWF, teaming up with Jacques Rougeau, and they were in a tag team called the Quebecers. And they dressed like Mounties, like Canadian cops, I guess that's what they are. They were, and then they were later managed by Johnny Pillow, who was later on as Raven, which we've talked about Raven on the show before, because he crucified a guy once. Yeah, I know, right? The Quebecers held the championship on three occasions.
That was even allowed on TV.
They beat the Steiners for it. They had good matches, 1-2-3 Kid Marginetti. They had some pretty good matches, I mean, for real. And then eventually they broke the tag team up, and Pierre went on to wrestle. He had a short stint as a singles wrestler in WWF, where he had a feud with Bret Hart, where he stole Bret Hart's jacket and glasses. And they had a match in Your House 3. And Pierre was always known as the worst wrestler of the two, of the Quebecers, for some reason. After this weekend, I have no idea why. But Dave Meltzer, he's a wrestling, one of the best wrestling insiders there is. He wrote about In Your House 3 in December 95, where Pierre had a match with Bret Hart. He described the match as the show saver and an excellent match. So, like, this dude who was pitted as, like, not a very good worker had a good match with the best worker in the company, Bret Hart, and saved the show. So, anyway, his WWF career came to an end shortly after. He had a fallout with the Click, which is Shawn Michaels, Diesel, Sean Waltman, Scott Hall, those guys. And then he had a short stint in WCW where he didn't really do much there. And then he returned to WWF in 98 and left in 2000. Had a really short stint, didn't do a whole lot. He went to ECW for a short time. And his main thing there was he just squashed people. And then he lost a match to Just Incredible, a wrestling Just Incredible for his ECW heavyweight title. Nice. Came back to WCW in 2000. And then after...
Wait. This guy, Just Incredible.
No, it was Justin. Like, yeah.
Was it like just?
He was space awesome. Like incredible. Like you look at him, and you're
Justin
like, this
dude's space credible.
Good, but he was pretty awesome. I mean, I'm like, well, I'm a fan funny. Of his. And then after he returned to WCW for a short time, he went back to the Indies in 2003. He wrestled the Indies, and then he went to TNA in 2003 and 2007, and then he retired in 2011. So up until this point, the dude had – he got his name known in WWF as Quebecer Pierre in the Quebecers, and then he had that match with Bret Hart, which people turned people's heads to him. Like, this dude's actually really good. But WWF also packaged him as a pirate gimmick, but it was because he wore an eye patch because he – lost sight in one of his eyes because he got shot in the eye with a BB gun. This is a tough man. I won't tell you how tough he is in a second. So when he retires, you know, like, he's just one of those, like, kind of like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy.
School me.
So last year, my buddy Mikey, he runs a promotion out in Indiana called Black Label Pro. If y'all are in the area, they have a show this weekend. They have a show coming up in July. Crown Point, Indiana, check him out on PyroBomb.tv, awesome stuff. He booked Carl Pierre Ulay, PCO, he booked him, which I was like, why are you booking this dude? The Quebecer? What? He was the worst Quebecer. Even I said that. If I didn't know much about the dude, other than he was in the Quebecers. And I'm like, wait, why are you booking this dude? So he booked him against Ethan Page. Ethan Page is a really good worker right now. He's one of the best in the world. So I didn't see the match, but Ethan Page runs a podcast called The Bitter Boys Club, and he was talking about the match on his podcast, and talking about how, like, he was talking about how Pierre, 50 years old, was doing moonsaults, doing all this crazy stuff, and they had a good match, and I'm like thinking, wait a second, are we talking about the right guy here? So I still didn't watch the match, because I was kind of just like, there's no way this is as good as they say it is. So then, you know, all the stuff from New Orleans is booked. Joey Janela Spring Break, big, huge show. I mean, Joey Janela Spring Break is a crazy show. It's at midnight. This is the second anniversary of it. It's at midnight, and it's just, it's a match of very random dream matches. Like, two like characters, wrestlers that you would never imagine wrestling each other. Joey Janela makes it happen. So they booked Walter versus PCO. And I'm thinking, okay, this is an old man going against Walter. Walter is one of these guys that literally kills people. And he wrestles away. He chops your chest till it's black. You know, Walter is the man. So I'm like, man, this match cannot be good. So the build up to this match, PCO was posting these videos on his Instagram of him like lifting crazy weights. Then what caught my eye, he had this one video. He's like lifting, like he has like these weights on his shoulder. He's lifting, and his buddy is just hitting him in the chest with a frying pan, really, really, really hard. And then Pierre puts the weights down, grabs the pan, and he bends the pan. And then he just goes, "Walter, I'm gonna eat you alive." I'm like, wait a second. Okay, I'm kind of excited for this guy now. Still had no idea like how good the dude really was. I never really watched his stuff after WWF. Then there's a video of him playing cards with his buddy, and his buddy tells him to rip the deck, or whatever the term is, cut the deck. Dude, he rips the deck of cards in half with his hands. The whole deck of cards just rips it. So I'm thinking, oh my god, okay. So we get to spring break, the match happens.
That's insane.
The best 20 minutes of my entire life. That was the best match I've ever seen in my life. This old man, he's 50 years old, he went 20 minutes with a very young, hot, very just energized, this crazy Walter. I mean, if y'all listening know who Walter is, y'all know like how just good that guy really is. This old man went 20 minutes with Walter. This old man did three different moonsaults. The first moonsault he did to the outside, he misses Walter, puts his face on the floor, busted his, I think his eye lid open, then gets back in the ring bleeding, just like, it didn't even faze the man. He does a swanton, a flip on top, but really good. They get this chop war, and I literally watched Pierre's chest go from skin color to black. And we're all standing up, just losing our mind. I mean, and then Walter has, his finisher is a powerbomb, and he powerbombed the heck out of Pierre through a table. Pierre kicks out after it. Like, and Pierre ended up winning the match. And after the match, like, you know how, like, the matches that I've showed you, like, at the end, the handshake? The match ends, Walter loses. Instead of handshaking, Walter goes up, chops Pierre. Pierre chops him back, and then they shake hands. It was the most manliest fight I've ever seen in my entire life. That match was better than anything WrestleMania WWE did. But anyway, I had to give that dude a spotlight because you, Pierre, Carl Olay, are your unsung hero of the 90s. And I'm so sorry on behalf of all wrestling fans who said you were the worst Quebecer. You are not the worst Quebecer. You are the freaking man.
So, I'm going to need you to do something tonight is...
I will.
Go find those videos on Instagram.
I'll find the clips of the matches too, so you can see all the crazy stuff that they did.
So I can see them. So I can find them.
Like, dude, it was awesome. So yeah, I know we kind of got. I kind of went outside of the 90s a little bit, but I mean, I had to give that dude some praise. I mean, that was. I mean, he out wrestled every young guy that weekend. I mean, 50 years old. I mean, apparently he does this stuff in Canada, but no one knows it. But now he's getting booked everywhere now. Now everyone's booking him now. So, you know what they say, you have it at 55, you have it at 50. So
sometimes one appearance is
all it takes.
Norma
Jean said, it's a song.
Okay. I'll take a word for it. But speaking of music, I thought since news broke that the founding member of Taking Back Sunday is leaving, I would put a spotlight on Taking Back Sunday, which, in fact,
she
is
said,
barely, but they are still, in fact,
let it go.
A 90s
okay,
band.
I'm a big fan.
Okay, so, so they actually started and formed in November of 1999. The starting lineup was guitarist Eddie Raines, who actually just left.
Movie Life Rules.
He
anyway.
Also played in the Movie Life, Mind Over Matter, and Inside.
Really good.
Movie Life is a band that I'd actually forgotten about until I sat down to do research for this. They're good.
Boo.
But it also featured guitarist Jesse Lacey of the Rookie Lots. Lacey also went on to form Brand New in early 2000. Whoa. Keep your opinions over there. The band was formed in Amityville, New York.
Oh,
so they were,
I think about
they
that
were
for
not
a second.
Haunted, which is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess. Wait, I guess it would be Amityville Horror. Yeah. Ha 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 ha. Oh, hi, Mark. So Lacey moved. Originally, both of them were guitarists originally in the beginning. Added a second guitarist named John Nolan, and
he was the.
I don't know that name.
Other
what
singer.
Is that name? What is it?
You know how
sound kind
they're
of
very
familiar,
known
kind
for
of not?
The lead singer and then the guitar player have big vocal parts, but he was the singer. The second singer on Tell All Your Friends. And then when he left, he went and started Stray Lot Run.
So the group, the original vocalist actually was Antonio Longo of One True Thing, and also included drummer Steven DeJosi. At a party, reading straight from from Wikipedia, Nolan reportedly romanced Lacey's.
There was actually a lot more drama behind
the band.
Him and Taking Back Sunday, but I don't really know like, off the top of my head what all it is. But I mean, that was one of the things. But there was a lot. Like, there was a big war. Like, when they. There was a time in the early 2000s where, like, you had to pick one Brand New or Taking Back Sunday. Because that's how much they hate each other.
Wow.
I'm not a Brand New fan, so take that something out of the way.
No. I would say that like I'm more of a Taking Back Sunday kind of guy. Like I don't think I've ever heard a Brand New song that I actually appreciate it.
Boy.
Like, I don't listen to
the first two
I
records.
Listen to Taking Back
Tell
Sunday
Your Friends and
but I do like a couple of their
and,
songs.
And Where You Wanna Be? Bro. I listen to that all the time still, on like, for real. I mean, I could sing you songs right now.
I didn't listen to really Victory Bands before Hawthorne. Like, Hawthorne was kind of like the breaking point of me, like, listening to bands that didn't sound like Under Oath.
Changed the game.
Because, like, I was, like, heavy. And then I heard Ohio's for Lovers, and I was like, oh, I need to start listening, and that's how I found out about Taking Back Sunday.
Did you get the little demo disc when? Did you buy the Hawthorne Heights CD
and
get the little demo disc with it?
Sounded like it. I actually just I had the first one, the first two.
I'm about to bust your bubble. The singer of Hawthorne Heights,
like,
is a very devout Christian.
If it's not Christian, I'm not going to listen to it.
So he says.
Hold on. I just bought the 10th anniversary edition of The Silence in Black and White, and actually features the original, features demos, acoustics, plus it has DVD bonus features that includes like demos, interviews, live like acoustic performances.
Good.
So like I did well. And I bought it for like $4, so.
Oh.
you know, you can't beat that. But getting back into the legacy of Taking Back Sunday. So after this whole drama thing went, then, you know, John Nolan called up his bro, Adam Lazzaro. He was like, "Hey, man, you want to fill in on bass?" Which, you know, Lozano was like, "Yeah, I could do that." So he moved from North Carolina to New York, and he's joined the band. And then they lost their drummer. But then they found one in Mark O'Connor. He joined, and they started recording their EP. And then they lost another member, their vocalist. He went to go play with the Prize Fighter and the Mirror. Do you know that band? Okay, well, I don't. So in December of 2000, Lozano switched from bass to lead vocals. However, he never thought that he was the group's singer, which is weird. I don't know. But they brought in a bassist of Sean Cooper, who was breaking.
I know you're talking about.
He was in a band called Breaking Benjia. Pangea? Is that? Okay. So in 2001 of February, they released their EP and they signed with Victory Records and released the album Tell All Your Friends a year later.
Dude, Tell Your Friends is one of the best
week's music moments
records ever written. Listen to both. Listen to that and Where You Want to Be. They're both really good.
I'll give it a shot. How about that? I will give it a shot. Because I've only sat down.
Where You Want to Be? The baby on it?
I listened to Louder Now, and then I listened to the one.
Well, Louder Now was a disappointment for me. I didn't like it.
Probably. Yeah. It was all right. I mean, it had a couple of good songs on it. Like I said, like, I wasn't, like, a huge Taking Back Sunday fan. Like, I kind of missed that boat. And I've never been able to, like, kind of, like, jump in it. It's not like, you know, 20 years later. All right, let me put it this way. Music from, like, the early 2000s with some bands, like Taking Back Sunday, I feel like doesn't have the same effect as, like, say, Michael Jackson, where you could hear something like Thriller or Billie Jean at any age, have been no cultural reference of whatsoever, and still appreciate it. I feel like you have to be a fan of Taking Back Sunday to truly appreciate them.
10 times more talented than Michael Jackson could ever imagine being, so. But I'll give you that. Look.
Thriller, Billie Jean, Smooth.
Look,
Criminal.
I don't have a big. I'm not a fan of
Michael,
classic stuff, really.
Despite was talented.
I'm a Debbie Downer when it comes to classic stuff like that.
Man, Michael Jackson came on my Spotify yesterday, and I like started almost not quite.
I had a similar reaction
to work yesterday. I love
that. I had a similar reaction the other day when
80s Michael
Control
Jackson's
by Metro Station
he
came on
after the 90s.
Shuffle.
Control is such a great term because if you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to reach out. That's the reason why we do this show. It's for you guys to know that there is light in the darkness. So if you guys are struggling for control, allow us to be the control factor for you guys. Please reach out. You guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, though we do suck at Twitter and somewhat on Instagram. But you guys can still reach out to us on theirs, and we're super quick to respond. You guys can also click call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or also text anonymously to 741-741. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 that take place each and every day. And those are, for every successful one of those suicides, 25 more attempted. That's 3,075 suicides attempted right here in our own backyard each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 suicides taking place all year, all around the globe. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. Every breath you take is precious, and we encourage you guys to reach out and treasure it as much as we treasure you guys.
So,
is that a wrap for us this week?
You find me at Instagram.
Yeah, apparently that's going to catch on.
Times. You find me
sucks,
at
so, where can
Twitter,
you find me online?
At BradenPSMC. And how about you, Captain?
So you guys can follow all my social media interactions are through Victims and Villains. It's Victims and Villains all throughout Facebook, Instagram,
also,
and Twitter.
Before we get off,
and I'm also now on Snapchat at Captain.
I need you
Nostalgia,
to work your magic
so.
Real quick. I'm calling out Elmo again. I have something to ask him, and I'm beefing. I need to know if you can get it.
Okay. All right.
So I have a question for you, finally. Yeah, yeah.
Yes?
Okay, how come we never gave Mr. Noodle his own freaking show?
Oh, this guy again.
Huh? Hey, don't talk about Mr. Noodle, man. Look, Mr. Noodle made... Look. Elmo's World was made because of Mr. Noodle. No one watched that show for
you.
It wasn't for Mr. Noodle.
Elmo?
No, they watched Mr. Noodle.
Whoa.
Mr. Noodle
Everyone
had the best mustache
Elmo.
Ever. You could never have a mustache that good. Oh, the Elmo.
Elmo.
Is he okay? Is he okay?
Okay. All right.
Oh, no.
Keep the peace. Keep the peace here. No. No, he's turning.
It's a good thing he's over there, not over here.
It looks like he's ready to explode. It looks like his head's about to, like, pop in and give me, like, unicorn blood and confetti. So... That is going to do it for Goodbye. Us this week on the PS Midnight Cast. And until next time, remember to keep chasing the 90s.